Hello, welcome to a new episode of Content Rookie. Today I want to talk about information architecture. And I will say right away, this episode is going to be quite basic. I'm making it because I've been getting a lot of messages from people that have started to work more with IA on how to best get started with it, what to read, who to follow, what courses there maybe are and how they can learn more and how to just best approach IA projects, but also sell them internally at the companies they're working at, because in smaller companies, these projects usually don't have clear mandates. And oftentimes, if you want to improve IA, you have to sell it to leadership first on why you want to spend time on it and why you might need resources. I will say right away, I am not an expert in IA. It's just one of the many things I do as a content designer. And there's other people in our field that deal basically only with IA, information architects, or ontologists that have much better insights into this. So that would be my first tip, find some of those. There's been some great episodes on Larry's podcast, Content Strategy Insights, on all things information architecture. So definitely take a look at that as well. And in general, what I always say when I talk about more specific more specific topics within content design, do a little Google, look at a couple of sources, read a couple of takes, and make up your own mind. I think IA is a little bit more established than some of the other things we do, so there's a lot of great advice already out there and how to approach it. I think what we don't talk about enough, though, is what is a good time to start information architecture work in a company? Or even what is a good time to start this from a content design perspective? Right in the beginning, when you're establishing things like term sheets, glossaries, patterns, tone and voice, or maybe a little later. How does information architecture relate to taxonomy and naming conventions and other things like that? So I'm going to talk a little bit about it in this episode just to kind of give you a download on how I've been approaching it. And hopefully that will answer some of the questions you have and maybe get you interested to look a little bit more into information architecture. So first of all, what I want to say is that information architecture isn't always actually something that is owned by the content design team. I've worked at companies where information architecture was very clearly managed by the UX designers themselves, or where they were even part of the design system. Or I've also worked in companies where information architecture had very little to do with the design side and was managed by technical writing teams or came from totally different sides of the company. However, I would say in a lot of small to medium-sized companies or companies that are currently scaling up, information architecture is not really at the core of everything that is being done. It's usually something that a lot of teams see a need for, but that often feels too complex to really take on top of other things that may be on the roadmap and other OKRs. So I think the main takeaway I have is on this, that if you are in a company where you see a need for information architecture, and you feel like, okay, this is really something that can improve our consistency, this is something that can improve our designs and a lot of the other things we do moving forward, then it's a good idea to, before you dive in, sell it up a little bit. So create a proposal, try to explain what IA is and how it can benefit that specific product or that specific company you're working on. Get some data from support and other sources to back that proposal and sell it up before you really start working on it. The reason why I say this so strongly in the beginning is that I've made the mistake a couple of times that I came into a company and I instantly saw, oh, okay, like the information architecture is super messy and complex here. We need to tackle it and kind of try to do it on the side of other projects that I was asked to focus on. And that usually leads to quite a lot of stress because information architecture is usually complex and it often requires talking to a lot of different stakeholders and trying to align those stakeholders around certain terms and definitions, which can be very difficult to do, especially if you're new and especially if you don't really have dedicated time in your priorities and in your capacity to work on information architecture. So essentially you're doing it on top of a bunch of other things. And then often the projects end up taking a long time or not being that efficient. So my first advice is, if you see a strong need to work with information architecture, Take a note of it and sell it up to your leads and maybe the company leadership in general, so you can get some allies. Maybe you can collaborate on this with a UX designer or a product designer or someone else. It can be very challenging to try to manage information architecture projects on your own, in my experience. Maybe this is just my point of view. That being said, there are a lot of upsides to tackling information architecture early on. First of all, they will make a lot of the content design foundations you set later on much easier to do. Things like naming conventions will be much clearer. Information architecture and taxonomy kind of go hand in hand. So if taxonomy is something you know the company is struggling with, starting out with information architecture is a great way to go into that as well. And also, it's actually a great way to identify relevant stakeholders for your content design work moving forward. Because as mentioned a little bit earlier, information architecture really is about identifying all of the different terms and the different types of information you have in a product, trying to figure out what they mean, how they relate to each other, how users discover it, and so forth. And then connecting that to things like user research, any kind of other data that we have, and figuring out what teams are responsible for all of these different things, then meeting with them, chatting with them through everything, trying to understand what all of these elements mean, how they relate to each other, what we can potentially simplify by using a different name or simplifying the name that we use. Or oftentimes in information architecture projects, it becomes very clear when there's issues because we, for example, have different terms for the same thing in different teams, or we have very strong internal terms that sometimes make it into, you know, out external facing documentation like the UI or support documents, for example, and that we need to clean up. But it's also a great way to identify where we maybe have too many names for the same thing. And that can also be really interesting. So information architecture, I think, really nicely also paves the way for things like term sheets and glossaries and so forth. And at the same time, I think also the vice versa is true. When you try to create a glossary or a term sheet, oftentimes you will get into things that are really information architecture questions. So I think you can separate term sheets, glossaries, taxonomy, information architecture, but it is much more sustainable and a better, a more high quality way forward if you connect them and work on them simultaneously or a little bit one by one. But you know, if you create a glossary, you also want to look at the information architecture and, for example, the other way around. That's at least how I would view it. And I know that in a lot of companies, this isn't possible due to a lack of resources or a lack of ownership when it comes to making these decisions that may come from taking a look at information architecture. But yeah, so much just to say on how information architecture could fit into your day-to-day as a content designer. So what even is information architecture? I didn't define it in the beginning, but essentially it's a science of organizing and structuring content on websites, webs, apps, social media, anywhere really. And there are many specialist roles that can work with information architecture. And a really good resource to look out for is Richard Saul, who's kind of considered the founder of IA today. And there's also the Information Architecture Institute that has a lot of great information. And then again, follow some information architecture experts online, see what they've been saying and writing about, and you will get a pretty good idea of what it is and how it can fit into what you're doing as a content designer. Why is information architecture so important? Well, as content designers, we know organizing content is essential and it really helps users experience less friction, find the product more usable, find everything they are looking for without much effort, and kind of manage expectations because we tell them this is the information you get and that's where they find it. But of course, it depends on a lot of different factors. So first of all, it depends a little bit on your target audience. It depends on what metrics you're structuring your IA for. And it also, of course, depends on the type of product you're working on. So here's an example that I got from a blog post on uxplanet.org on the basics of information architecture. They say that, for example, if you compare a retail website and a blog, you'll see two absolutely different structures, both efficient for accomplishing certain objectives. Information architecture has become the fundamental study in many spheres, including design and software development, to deal with that. And in design, of course, information architecture is essential to have a user-centered approach to the information you put in any kind of thing that you're designing. So it's essentially a little bit like a skeleton of any product you have. It can combine visual elements, functionality, interactions, navigation items, all of the different entities you may have in a product, or even user roles. And by connecting them with information architecture, it's just easier to keep an overview and to make sure that all of that content is organized in a way that makes designing the right type of navigation, for example, easy, or that makes clear when you want what type of content and what part of the product. And even though, of course, when I talk about it like this, and maybe even for us as content designers or those of you who are content designers and are listening, it may be very obvious why information architecture is important. But in a lot of companies, it usually isn't addressed until they've grown quite a bit, or their design teams have grown quite a bit, or honestly, and this is my experience, it's not addressed until you run into issues because you haven't paid attention to information architecture previously. And then you're kind of in a little bit of a messy spot where you have to figure out all the different elements that are part of your information architecture, how they relate to each other, and then potentially you have to fix some of the issues that have come up because you haven't paid attention to information architecture before. Like I said, that could be just in naming things and having too many elements that users may confuse with each other. It may be in, instead of relating elements to each other and reusing them, you have created additional ones. And there may be many, many other issues here. I don't think that I have the capacity to go into detail here in this episode. But again, when you start reading a little bit more about information architecture, there's some really great examples out there. So if you want to tackle information architecture, how do you best approach it? I think, or how I've been doing it, and again, there's a lot of different approaches to this, and usually I have approached information architecture as not one of the big things I was hired to do, but something I had to also tackle to make sure that the output of my work had high enough quality. So the first thing I like to do is I just try to collect everything that is considered information in the company or with the product that I'm working on. And I just documented in a very easy table format. This is what we call it, and this is what I think it means. So I try to define it. And then as soon as I feel like I have a list with enough content in there, I usually share it with two feedback requests. I say, hey, is there anything I'm missing here that clearly is information and should be part of this? And hey, can you please review the definitions and let me know if they're correct, or leave any comments on where you think I need to change them or where something is wrong. So this sounds like a very simple approach and a simple feedback request, but this is usually where things already start kind of, you know, escalating. Because oftentimes if people are commenting on this document, or even when I'm taking it to stakeholders and talking to them one-on-one about it, I quickly see where issues come from. So oftentimes stakeholders cannot agree on definitions because different teams actually have different ideas of what certain information means. At the same time, there's often confusion between what we internally may refer to something versus to how we want the users to see it or experience it. That can lead to issues as well. So usually just these two type of feedback requests. Is there everything in here? Is any information missing? And do these definitions make sense to you? Takes a lot of time to manage, and you need to have a lot of discussions with stakeholders to help align. And usually what ends up happening is that we're not able to align on like one-on-one the definitions that everyone wants, but kind of like on the most common denominator. So for example, we want to define something, what is an app within this product? Then some people may say, oh, it's something that is pre-installed. Some people may say, oh, it's something that we pre-built. Some people might say, oh, it's something that you can find in this specific part of the navigation. And all of those things are technically true or untrue, depending on which team's perspective you have. And so we have to align on one of those things. And then maybe one of these things is easier to align on than the others. For example, okay, an app is anything that is pre-installed, period. And then we try not to define it further, but instead we start looking at taxonomies and how specific categories of apps may relate to that. So that's a little bit usually the type of discussion you'll be in or you'll find yourself being part of. And I find these quite complex And I think it's really important to structure those discussions and be very clear in what you're looking for. Because if you don't, then you end up having really endless conversations that can feel very, very difficult to translate back into your documentation that you're building to deal with information architecture. I just want to make a side note because I've been mentioning the term taxonomy, but I haven't explained it yet. So taxonomy is just a science of naming, describing, and classifying anything, really. So that's what ties into information architecture, and then will later also tie into things like your naming conventions. All right, but then once I've started those discussions with stakeholders on information bits and pieces and what they mean, usually then the next step is to kind of try to align them. And when I feel like I'm at a point now where I've aligned on the majority of terms, usually not all of them, I've really never been in an information architecture project where I was able to align everyone on everything in the first step of it. The second step is to take it to CRIT or to JAM. That can be just within your core design group, or you can also create your own one where you again invite specific stakeholders that you think have high relevance for information architecture, and you present what you currently have, what you've tried to align things on, how you've redefined things, and you just ask for feedback. And I suggest if you have the time to do this process a couple of times, so keep iterating based on feedback until you are in a spot with your information architecture where you feel like, okay, like I've heard all the different voices. We're at a point now where we've agreed on a majority of things, and you feel like in the third step, you can make some suggestions based on this information architecture. So a suggestion could be anything, really. It could be something like, hey, we should avoid using this term because people don't understand it. We should use this term instead. Or it could be a little bit more conceptual on, for example, hey, people don't understand what co-creation is and how we name certain things as part of a co-creation feature. We need to redefine what co-creation is and look into the taxonomy around all things co-creation for our product and align on that. It could also contain suggestions like, hey, we seem to use term X a lot, but this is not a great user-facing term to use because of reasons A, B, C, so we should avoid that. But you can also have recommendations on certain terms that work well and why we should try to use them more. And then you can have very general recommendations where, for example, you've spotted inconsistencies. Side note, this is also something information architecture projects are great for. Like I often end up finding inconsistencies on how we talk about things in, you know, the UI versus support documents versus other documents. And then this is a great way to say like, hey, we should probably consistently call this thing X and not Y. And here's why. And the here's why is another really important part. So I've done both successful and less successful information architecture projects or attempts at clarifying information architecture. And in the more successful cases, I had access to two things that made a big difference. Number one is user insights and user research that could help me back certain concepts, but also help me show that certain things were just not clear and we had to change how we talk about them or how we introduce them. And the second point was a collaboration with either an engineer or a designer that would help me visualize everything. So usually when I, as a content designer, work in information architecture, like I say, it's a lot of text, it's a lot of tables. Sometimes I can create or will create a very basic mind map to try to show visually how things relate to each other. But it's usually much more successful if you have a designer or an engineer helping you with this because they have additional context that they can bring from their perspective. And usually the visuals are also much nicer than if I do it. Now, keep in mind, I specifically am not very great at making things look nice. So that may also just be a personal thing. But if you can partner up with a designer or an engineer, that's a really great way to bring your information architecture project forward a lot faster. And then a couple of things to keep in mind as well is, so even if you create like an airtight document for information architecture, you've made your suggestions, people have agreed on your suggestions, people are happy with the definitions, all of that, then I would say is when another big chunk of work starts, because you'll suddenly realize, okay, so how do we actually apply these changes? who can help us find all of the mentions of a certain term and replace them? Where is this term even mentioned? It's probably not just in Figma. It's probably also in a couple of support documents and a couple of other places like your CMS system or whatnot. How do we pull all of this out? Who updates all of this? How do we quality control out of this? How do we localize all of this? Do we need to inform users of certain changes if there may be more dramatic or larger changes, or can we just roll them out subtly? How do we best approach it in terms of when different teams are responsible for different parts of flows and things, and we can't make these changes, you know, at the same time on the same day? So in the beginning, there might be more inconsistency. And how do you get any of this prioritized in your usually very busy team's roadmaps? So that for me is actually one of the big things why I really enjoy working with information architecture, because when you're at that point where you're trying to figure out how can you make these changes, how can you address these things within the company, you learn so much about how the company works, but also how in general any kind of copy and content related changes will be handled. And this, I think, is pretty much one of the reasons why I do recommend not waiting to tackle information architecture for too long when you joined a company, or maybe specifically when you're establishing a new content design practice, because information architecture gives you a really unique opportunity to propose changes to content and copy that are backed by a lot of stakeholders and a lot of your data usually, and so that are taken very seriously. And if you can get those changes made and rolled out in an efficient way, you'll learn a lot about the process and a lot of things that you may want to improve about the process and how you can get copy changes made later on when you're working from other things from content design that you want to have adjusted. So in that way, I find it really, really valuable to work in information architecture as well. So like I mentioned, this was a very, very general introduction to information architecture. And again, I'm in no way an expert. It's just one of the things I do as a content designer. And I've shared pretty much only my approach to it and how I've worked with it with a couple of other teams that I've collaborated on information architecture problems. I find it super interesting. I will say it feels very complex. Every single time I start working with information architecture, no matter where I start working with information architecture, you will discover so many inconsistencies and complexities and relationships between specific kind of information. You will have a couple of mental breakdowns, or likely if you're like me. And sometimes you will feel really dumb because it can feel very difficult to understand subtle differences between things that essentially you thought until just, you know, before that stakeholder meeting were exactly the same thing and were maybe an easy fix. So I think it's a great opportunity to also grow your skills, push yourself a little bit, challenge yourself. And if you work at a big tech company and you know there are bigger teams, then most likely you even have access to someone like a taxonomist or an ontologist or even an information architect that you can probably just, you know, get to know a little bit better, learn from them how they've approached information architecture at that company, and, you know, download some of that knowledge because it might come in handy later on. And I definitely think as content designers, if you are a content designer or interested in content design or UX writing, information architecture and how to best tackle those projects is a huge, huge skill that I think most companies aren't aware of is needed when they hire content designers, but really, really benefit from when they get it. So for me, this has also been one of those things that has really elevated my career moving forward, that I am able to work with information architecture and I don't shy away from it. So I definitely recommend you look a little bit more into it. If you're interested in this topic, please message me and I'm going to try to get an ontologist or an information architect on the pod to tell a little bit more specific strategies and maybe what they learned in school when they were dealing with this, and we can take it from there. So that was it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening in. Again, thank you for everyone that is sending feedback and kind words and questions and everyone that is pitching to be a guest. Yes, there are episodes with guests coming again soon. I have a big, big backlog of people that are going to be on the pod or want to be on the pod that I just haven't had time to schedule yet. But it is happening. And again, thank you so much for tuning in and listening. And I hope you'll stick around for the next episode. This is Nicole from Content Rookie.